tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tip Today. Michael Brophy in this morning for Fran. Just to get back to some of your texts on the issues in Littleton and the issues just of speeding in general around schools, I'll get to a few of those texts. Knockavilla School, the worst situation in the county, in from one text. Feddard is an absolute nightmare. It's like a racing track, even though the speed limit is clearly defined with flashing lights. Something needs to be done. That's in from Ger. Jim Ryan is 100% right. Littleton is in bad need of signs for children at play and school crossing radar signs needed too. That's from Patrick. Huge problems with speeding traffic on the Mitchellstown Road here in Kerr as well. Despite calming traffic measures being put on the road last year, lots of young families now living in the area and parents are very concerned about the amount of traffic that continues to speed excessively. All HGVs use this road to get to the factories out the Clohean Road. The residents on this road appreciate the works carried out by the council but feel that speed cushions are a simple answer to slow down the traffic, as can be seen on other roads throughout the country in built-up areas. That's in from a concerned resident. And just one more. Jim Ryan is correct. We badly need signs and school crossing in Littleton. Also the radar sign. That's in from Sharon, and plenty of people, like I said, in agreement with Jim about the situation there in Littleton. So keep those texts coming in on where the problem sites are in Tipperary and what your own solutions, what ones you would recommend. To get back to COVID-19 now, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, says there's been an increase in the number of people admitted to hospital and ICU in recent days. Latest data reveals that there are 408 COVID-19 patients in hospital, including 69 in intensive care. Approximately 70% of people being treated in intensive care for COVID have not been fully vaccinated. Joining me now for more on this is Professor of Immunovirology at UCC, Liam Fanning. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Liam, I mean, we're coming up to an interesting couple of days. October 22nd is the big date people had in mind about the easing of further restrictions, or indeed almost all restrictions. But NPHET is setting out its stall now about its own concerns with the situation on case numbers, hospital numbers, stuff like that. Do you find the hospital numbers at the moment quite concerning?
I suppose when listening to, you know, the trajectory of information over the last year and a half from NPHET and organisations, there is a kind of pattern of, we'll say, giving, a rather negative interpretation of the data that's available in the days before they actually make their interpretation, a bit like kite flying if it were coming up to a budget. And, you know, what we know from these figures, what they're telling us is that if, you know, we look at the unvaccinated and the vaccinated, there would only be about 25 people vaccinated out of those 70 in ICU if you take out the unvaccinated. And what that tells us is that, you know, most of the issues regarding COVID-19 have been around protecting the hospitals and stopping people from ending up going into hospitals, because we haven't got a hospital capacity that can take a kind of a surge such as presented by COVID-19. It can hardly cope with what we have normally, never mind when we have a COVID-19 addition onto it. We have long asked many individuals to give up their freedoms and rights to protect the hospitals and to protect other individuals. And at this stage, you know, we have about 300,000 individuals who are unvaccinated in this country above 16 or 18, thereabouts anyway. And, like, you know, really, that's the crux of the issue. Like, there's no point in sugarcoating it. Those individuals who are unvaccinated is where this virus is going to predominantly circulate. And we've seen that those individuals are the ones that are predominantly populating the ICU numbers. So when NPHET and government speak about concern about viral numbers, they're actually speaking about concern about the hospital capacity to handle COVID-19 infections, but more particularly, the impact it has on other care. So, you know, there will be other care deferred and beds not available, because there will be individuals who have chosen not to get vaccinated who may not have been in hospital had they been vaccinated. We have had these vaccines available since January and, you know, to the entire population for the last couple of months, and 12 to 15 goes more recently. And they have been shown to be wonderfully protective. More than we ever anticipated at the beginning of this journey nearly 20 months ago as to how protective they are about protecting against hospitalisation. Sure, we know that people who are vaccinated can get reinfected, and we've seen as a result of our understanding of maybe the Israeli data and some of the other data around the world that we've started to give a third shot to those that are over 65 in care facilities and those that are over 80 in the community. And I expect that that will move down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Once when they're done, they should be done probably by the end of October, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see a kind of a general kind of, you know, over 65 within the community, you know, if you so choose, please come and get a booster shot. And that won't matter whether you've had an AstraZeneca or a J&J, first of all. It will be kind of, you know, come one and all to get an additional shot, be that a two shot or the one shot for the J&J that you have already. So the numbers, while they speak about concerning, remember the other thing too, Michael, is, well, and you know, some of the numbers saying that Ireland has a very high positivity rate relative to the rest of Europe and even the world. But, you know, we're using PCR testing. Lots of Europe are using antigen testing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in behind every PCR test is the question that should be asked, what was the amount of virus in that sample? And there's a metric or a measure we use. It's called the CT value. And the lower it is, the higher amount of virus you have. It's a little bit counterintuitive. But the lower that value is, the earlier it comes up in the assay, which means you have more virus. And we know that CT values 25 or less are likely to be infectious. But PCR can detect individuals who are at the very beginning of their infection and not likely to transmit it. We can detect people who have had it for, you know, maybe 2-3 weeks past, well past the transmissible phase of the infection. So, you know, it would be good to have insight from the, we'll say, the positivity data as to how many of them were less than this value of 25. So therefore, how many of them were likely to be infectious? Because that's the data we're getting from Europe. They're using antigen testing. And antigen testing will pick you up positive for probably about 4 days out of the infection course if you're unvaccinated when you're very high titers. And that's the other thing about vaccination. You know, you can clear this infection much quicker, a bit like the flu, if you're vaccinated, and you'll have smaller amounts of the virus quicker.
To go back to the hospital situation and the capacity issues there. So, doc, I mean, our vaccination rate is excellent in an international context, but Dr. Glynn says that even in spite of that, there's still just under 300,000 adults who've not come forward for vaccination, and a further 70,000 people have received just one dose of a two-dose schedule. Now, there's a certain, you know, a significant portion of that, I'm sure, that, you know, it's been recommended for one reason or another that they can't take the vaccine for one reason or another, like I said. But, I mean, in light of that and the spread of the virus at the moment and how stretched the hospital resources are you... Would you be hesitant about reopen or easing restrictions further on October 22nd?
Okay, so just before I jump into answer that question, you know, the number of people who are recommended not to take the vaccine out of that 300,000 is a very small number. You know, so there is a responsibility on those 300,000. Let's not sugarcoat it. They have a responsibility to get vaccinated to protect themselves and others and the hospital system. And this is not just about COVID. This is about protecting the hospital system for your cancer care, for your cystic fibrosis care, for everything. Do you know what I mean? This is actually impacting way more than just one patient in an ICU because of the, you know. So to go to your point about it opening up, you know, because this is largely an infection, you know, sustained by unvaccinated people, it is not conscionable to actually restrict the movement of those individuals anymore or not to give us the extra freedoms on the 22nd because there's a large group of individuals who choose not to get vaccinated and are occupying ICU beds. I mean, I'm very much a believer that these vaccines are a support to getting us back to what we all want to do, which is the freedom to make choices and to do what we want and socialise as we want. Because remember, one of the things that was going to go on the 22nd and hopefully still will is social distancing. And, you know, so that we can kind of remove that kind of awful word or those two words from our language, you know, that we have to social distance because it acts on an impediment on so many levels, you know.
Just in conjunction with that, because I'm conscious as well of flu season and flu jabs as well, because, I mean, through our best efforts, flu season didn't seem to be an issue anyway last winter. But this time around, with an increased easing of restrictions and also, you know, I think fair to say maybe a greater degree of complacency in a lot of areas with regard to meeting restrictions, Could the flu season cause, an even greater toll on hospitals, cause greater strain on hospitals as well over the coming months?
But Michael, there's a vaccine for flu as well. We do have tools. We don't have...
Is there a case to be made that that should be free now too as well? Because, there is the cost element which turns
correct.
A lot of people off the
flu. And I'm sure from, get the health economic wizard on, but I'm sure from a health economic perspective, even if the flu vaccine, isn't fully effective, it shortens duration of illness, keeps people out of hospital. I'm sure there's a health economic argument on some level for making it free. Look, we have spent billions. This is nearly 40 plus billion as a result of COVID-19. I don't think giving free flu this year to everybody would break the bank any more than it is currently broken. And this business of mentioned that people have become complacent. I would disagree with the sentiment behind that. People have embraced vaccination and we are as protected as we can be. Admittedly, some people are going to get a third shot, and as I said earlier, more people I believe will get a third shot, and ultimately parents and guardians will be able to make a decision probably about January time about getting their 5 to 11 year olds vaccinated. That's a very different conversation about benefit and risk. But however, this business of people becoming complacent, they're actually living within the guidelines, and they're probably stretching them a bit as well, to be fair. But, we are as protected as we can. The problem is with the bottleneck of the hospital system, not so much numbers. If we had a hospital system that could cope and everybody was vaccinated, we wouldn't be talking about just 25 vaccinated people who may have other conditions in ICU.
With regard to the variants as well, looking ahead, it feels as though the Delta we were going through a phase of, a couple of different variants kind of hitting the news agenda month after month, but the Delta variant has hung around for an awful long time. Is there any concerns about any other variants in the coming months among your peers?
Well, I suppose from viral fitness perspective, Delta seems to have kind of set the bar really high for any other variant to replace it. We know what we're dealing with now with Delta. So, it's really efficient at finding unvaccinated individuals or those that whose immunity has waned slightly. It's really efficient at producing more what we call daughter viruses or daughter virions and passing it on when it can to an unvaccinated individual. So it is, the threshold now is so high, virologically speaking. It's not to say that it won't happen, Michael, but at the moment there doesn't seem to be a variant that has arisen that can outcompete Delta. We saw there was a new variant in Colombia which seems to take over a lot of the Colombian population or that were virus positive. But beyond Colombia, Delta is so strong and so fit, it's outrunning everybody else. So at the moment, there doesn't seem to be anything else. And not to underplay any of the consequences of Delta, but we do know these vaccines work against Delta. So, for the most part, we don't want another variant that could be a vaccine escape variant to come out. But, there are constraints on the virus too. Like for every change it makes, while it might be more infectious, it might have an impact on its ability, what we call to complete its life cycle, Michael. It mightn't be able to do all the things it needs to do in the cell to produce more of it. So, there are consequences to changing, if you like, the buttons on its coat. So these changes, for the most part, are on the outside of the virus. And by changing the buttons, it can kind of either get better into the buttonhole and get into the cell. But sometimes there's a consequence of that. It might get in, but it mightn't be able to get out as easily. So Delta seems to be the kind of main player for the moment, because of its overall fitness and capacity to produce more, it's like an elite runner. The others have been left way behind at the moment, and until somebody else, some other Usain Bolt comes along and able to take it over, I think we will have Delta for a while.
Okay, very interesting, Liam. As always, thanks very much for your insight.
You're welcome, Michael.
Professor Liam Fanning there, Professor of Immunovirology down at University College Cork. Before we go to a break, two very contrasting text messages on that issue. Firstly, good morning. The softly approach has to stop regarding unvaccinated people. No matter how sick they are, hospitals shouldn't have to take them in and holding up ambulance services. They choose not to get vaccinated, so suffer the consequences. We now need to look after everyone else who were left and now need help. Unvaccinated chose their life. Listen to our scientists. Vaccination should be mandatory, as should those working in hospitals and nursing homes. I know that was an issue we were discussing in recent days as well, whether frontline healthcare workers should be mandated to get vaccinated. On alternative sense, good day. Please stop people who don't want this vaccine being demonised. There are numerous people vaccinated who are also in hospital, but we don't hear this. That's from Catherine. I think Professor Fanning mentioned on multiple occasions that there are people who are vaccinated that are in intensive care units, but I guess the point is made that it's a much lower proportion of people of the vaccinated community that are in intensive care as opposed to the proportion of unvaccinated people that are in intensive care. So please do get your thoughts in 083 311 3311 on text. We're coming up next, we'll be focusing a bit more on agriculture with Pat O'Toole from the Farmers Journal.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.